So as I said to you, we do have coming up in not too long from now an interview with Karen Nunes Teixeira. We'll be discussing with her several things that are taking place at this point in time on the political landscape. And I think Ms. Teixeira has logged on. Let's see if she's hearing us at this point in time. Let's get straight into our interview. Well, she's been here on numerous occasions before. She joins us again this morning. Let's welcome Karen Nunes Teixeira to our program. Good morning to you. And it's nice to have you with us.
And yes, I'm hearing you. I just said, make sure that I'm on time.
Yes.
A little bit too late.
Yeah, I know, right? It's nice to have you with us here this morning. There's a lot to discuss with you. You made some pretty bold moves recently that have set tongues wagging. You've been making some pronouncements for quite some time that you've made some on this program, you've made it in other places as well, that you're not necessarily happy with the way things were going and that you thought strong action needed to be taken. That action didn't happen. You've taken actions on your own. And most prominently is resigning from the party that you've been associated with for quite some time, a party that you represented as a minister of finance, and moving on. Let's start there. Tell us about what led you to that point, because that's a big move. That's a big decision for anyone to take, and for somebody in your capacity within the party, it says a lot. Tell us about what happened and why you did what you did.
Okay, so I hope you don't mind me just referencing the internal election, which I guess is what you were speaking about. And you were very kind about how you put it in terms of how I did not fare well. But I would just want to say, by way of analogy, someone actually approached me in the cinema when I had my two grandchildren with me and told me I was a loser. And I had to tell him, well, if I'm a loser, the PNM internal elections was a great loss for the prime minister, because they, instead of getting the usual 15,000 votes, they got 7,000 less with a much larger membership. So I just want to make that point that, they did. And in his own constituency, the prime minister, with 3 days of voting, I think he got 144 votes in all. And on the day of the national convention, where the voting really should take place, with 14,000 people, according to Mr. Imber, the chairman, only 844 people cast their votes. So you have to wonder who the 8,000 are. So I'll leave it at that. To answer your question, yes, it's a bold move. But I think at the end of the day, I've used the metaphor of the battered wife syndrome, or whether is not recognized in the UK as a defense. I don't know if it's a defense, but let me see. As a defense, is coercive control. It amounts to the same thing, and has been successfully used. And I use that because within the last few years, the PNM leadership has become more and more emboldened. And we have been hit back to back. We can't even recover from one until we get another thing. I can, of course, give you examples. And my concern, of course, is the leadership that's there is a leadership that, if you put a combined experience, may come up to over 100 years. And they are good politicians. There's a difference between a good leader and a good politician. And they are good politicians. So that even when Mr. Dr. Rowley does demit office and decided he won't run, I'm quite positive that he's not going to do that without putting things in place. And putting things in place is to ensure that those who, this is my opinion at this point in time, who may present a challenge to him are not put in that position to be able to do so. So that things will go on as usual as they're going on now. And it is for that reason I felt there was no real hope in staying in the PNM, because I didn't see that things would change even when he goes, because I...
Okay, Mrs. Teixeira, I'm not sure if you're hearing me, but we are having a bit of a technical difficulty that just popped up that I'm not hearing you at all. So I'm going to have the technicians come in and look at this and see if we can rectify it. I must apologize for that. We have a couple messages in the interim. Let me see how fast we can get this repaired so that we can get into our interview. Stay with us.
Do you want to learn more about the world around you? The stories of the world have the power to transform our lives
every day.
Tune in to Freedom 106.5 FM daily or log on to tbcradionetwork.co.tt/freedom1065 for Freedom Moments.
Freedom Moments.
Explore the world with us, then speak your mind on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I must apologize for the interruption to our interview with Karen Nunes to Shera. When you're working with technology, things happen. I'm trying to have it rectified. It might take just a couple minutes again. Let me see how quickly I can get this done. I think we do have her back online. Let's see if we can. Sister Shera, are you hearing us?
Are you hearing me?
Yeah, well, I think yes, I'm hearing you now. I must apologize. For some strange reason, I have no idea what happens, but the audio just gives problems and we just can't hear, or you can't hear us. I'm assuming we couldn't hear you for a bit in time. Hopefully it's back up and running, but that's unfortunate because we have such a short time for our interview here this morning.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think I'll repeat what I said. I'll just say that for the reason that I don't know if the listeners heard me, but what I think, whatever the issues were that made me leave in the first, want me to leave in the first place, I think it will continue because I don't think the leadership will allow a leader or a leadership team that will not continue what is already in place. And for that reason alone, I lost a lot of hope in the change of leadership, making a change in what is going on in the PNM now.
That's an interesting perspective because we hear the same thing coming out of the UNC. We hear the very, very, very same thing. People saying that Kamala Passad-Bisesa has surrounded herself by Seta Yes people who will ensure that she remains in power, even though there are some who believe the party is not necessarily heading in the right direction. But how widespread?
Well, I'm not saying that he will stay, you know. I'm saying that even when he goes, the way the party structure is and the persons who are seen to be in within the core of the party leadership, I'm confident that whatever he does, he will ensure because there are persons who have vested interest in making sure things stay as is. And because of that, when even though Dr. Rowley will no longer be there, there will be a time when he won't be there. That the leadership and what he has started based on even the utterances of those who he surrounds himself with, they are consistent with how he speaks. So that's why I think there's going to be any change.
How widespread do you think this sentiment is within the party and within the supporters and the membership and so on? Do you think it's a position that people share?
I think, as you just have mentioned, I think on both sides of the coin, both on the UNC and the PNM, there's a level of disaffection and cynicism that goes with it and a desire to see a change. The difference, though, is I believe for many PNMites, because of Mr. Dr. Rowley's age, as healthy as he may appear, he's not a young man. And I think that they believe that once he goes in 2025, supposedly, then the party will be able to restructure and go back to its original moorings. And they're holding on to that hope. And I am saying that from my own experience being in cabinet and understanding how these things operate and the experience of Mr. Dr. Rowley, the combined experience of he and others at the head table, so to speak, maybe about 100 years, he's not going to allow, he's not, in my respectful opinion, he's not going to allow any change because he has the persons outside of the cabinet who finance the cabinet, and he certainly will not allow that to happen.
You're making some pretty strong pronouncements. And you're making some pretty strong pronouncements about the governance of this country. And you're not shy about making those pronouncements. I'm assuming it's because you have information that would allow you to make the statements that you're making about who's pulling the government's strings and why things are going to stay the way that they are. You've now moved on. And you've severed your ties with the PNM in a very public manner, and you've moved on to a new entity now. Tell us about this new entity, who's involved.
Okay, and I will just say there has not been a launch, formal launch of the parties yet. And we do know, I think as a public knowledge, the leader is Mr. Timothy Hammersmith, who I'm sure I'm not going to pronounce it correctly, but everybody knows Hammersmith and Company is one of the highly respected oldest firms, commercial law firms in Trinidad and Tobago. And he has headed the firm for many years, and he was at one point in time president under UNC government. So he brings a lot of his own commercial and his business experience and even his own political experience. In terms of the deputy political leaders, I can speak to that. One is Mr. Louis Lee Singh. And as I always tell people today, we have talk radio. He brought talk radio to Trinidad and Tobago. First at 102 and then I-95. And at first people were, you know, very skeptical that could happen. And as we see today, many years later, I think most people listen to talk radio. So he has a proven track record. Plus he was mayor of Port of Spain. So he has proven himself to be a doer. In the half a term that I had in which to operate, but half a term, because remember it was 5 years, and Mr. Manning, who was the leader, made the decision. I found it like the rest of the party that he was calling the elections. I didn't have any pre-knowledge at all. But I do know that in that short period of time, I was able to accomplish a lot of things, a number of things, whether it was legislative, Financial Institutions Act, the FIU, the Insurance Amendment Act, the Central Bank Amendment Act, the other piece of the other, and oh, of course, well, much maligned, but still everyone is agreeing that we should have it, the Property Tax Act. And not only was, and so those are, that's legislative. On the project side of the Foreign Exchange Reserve Opportunities International Financial Center, we had Lehman Brothers sign an MOU with us. We had one of the major international banks moving all of the operations back group operations to us. We had visited Dubai twice, and the idea was the herd mentality. The point was the global financial crisis came, and so it had to be put on hold. We lost office, so that appeared to have been put to rest. The other thing, of course, which everyone knows, is the CL financial crisis, which with the MOU, and regardless of what you may think, it had a significant impact in making sure that there was no run on the country that had been experienced by so many other countries. And I will just use, by way of reference, so that I don't go on about it, is a recent Court of Appeal decision in the Proman case, where the court said that the sale by CL Financial on behalf of Mr. Dupriel, on behalf of CL Financial and Clico, which had 51% majority shareholding, was invalid. There was fraud, according to the Court of Appeal, in that transaction. And they said very clearly, wait not for the MOU, not me, the Court of Appeal said, wait not for the MOU that was signed 3 days before. Mr. Dupre, with a family-owned company, privately-owned, could have done what he wanted. The MOU put a stop to that. And it was because of the MOU that essentially brought that, made the MOU. Now, it's gone to the Privy Council, I believe. But the point is, so I had the MOU, the IFC, the property tax, and I'm talking about a reform. Many people don't know, it's not just a question of passing the legislation. It was also bringing information systems in place, which we did. And at the time we were about to call the elections, we had bills ready to send out. Prime Minister said no, put a stop on it. But we reached a point of having bills sent out. And as you will note, regardless of all these administrations that have passed, there has been no change in the percentage in terms of the assessed tax. So I won't go on about that. So I think I've had, in terms of the 2.5 years that I had in office, I think I have shown that I was, as a minister, very results-oriented and achieved a significant amount in that short period of time. Yeah. Also, the Revenue Authority, we had passed it in the lower house, and then we prorogued our parliament. So we had reached that far with the Revenue Authority also.
I don't think anybody could deny what you're talking about. The things that you were involved in, and some of the plans and the programs that you have, that you've spoken about, You're very versed when it comes to financial matters. You were a former minister of finance. You continue to speak about the country's economy and give your ideas to prove to people that you're very well aware of where we were, where we are, and where we probably could end up if we don't do certain things. And nobody's going to take that away. And Timothy Hamill Smith is somebody who's well respected. Across both sides of the fence, Timothy Hamill Smith is one of those persons that seems to transcend that level of hatred and animosity amongst people, simply because people respect him as a professional. And those are very, very interesting traits. But it's the formation now of a new entity once again. We just had a local government election where we had 10 party and 6 independents. And we all saw how despondent the electorate was when it comes to voting. Now, I'm assuming, and you've not necessarily spoken about the intention, but you don't enter a race to lose. You enter a race to win, and you have to participate in the race in order to make some sort of impact. So can we expect that this party, with 2 years, probably 2 years, 2.5 years, till the next general election, would be contesting the 2025 election?
Absolutely, and I don't think I was speaking out to say that. I think what I really wanted to emphasize, it wasn't so much things that were done. It was to show that we are not like, you know, someone else, are we another pressure group? And I use by way of example, with all due respect to him, because Mr. Lloyd Best was my supervisor when I did international relations and also at the MBA program, he was one of our lecturers and I had a very good relationship with him, but he was not a good politician. You couldn't win a seat. And to be a good politician, you can't just have good ideas. You have to be able to show people that you can implement. And all that I tried to do in saying what I did say just now was to show that in the 2.5 years that I had, that I was very results oriented. Mm-hmm. The problem with this government since the beginning, since it came into office, it's if you go to every budget, the game changers, the thing they say they will do, they're going to do, they're going to do, they're going to do. What has happened? Even the Economic Advisory Board. I mean, my God, have an advisory board that was dismantled. The Dragon Field, I think that's really up in the air now. I wish it does happen. But the way things look, I don't know if that is going to be a reality. And certainly if Trump wins, well, that dead in water. And then you had the Sanders deal that went right through the window. And a major thing which the IMF has been pressing for the government to do from the get-go is with the IMF and the National Statistical Institute. Where are all these things? What about the DPP? He has 57 staff attorneys. He needs, the UNC government agreed by a cabinet to give him 134. He has been crying out that he's been understaffed. More responsibilities have been put on him, and yet he's not given the proper staffing. You look at the majors. I actually took out the papers, yesterday's paper, because I thought it was so interesting. The headline said, "The Curse of Cocaine." So if anyone wants to pretend that what is the underbelly of our crime is the cocaine trade and the drug and the guns that go with it, then they're fooling themselves. And then we have to learn, by chance, through a joint select committee, that the scanners have not been working for a number of months. So guns and cocaine must have been coming in and out. It's because we have a lot of guns that are not licensed in this country. And then we learned that the helicopters were down. We learned that a lot of the OPVs are sitting on there under repair. And the DPP put under pressure by the Prime Minister himself, saying, "I have a building for you to go into and you won't go in." But now I understand why I can't say why now. I don't get in trouble. But for good reasons, for security reasons, which he keeps saying very broadly, I understand why. And I know the Prime Minister understands why. And yet you paid rent for 4 years for a building that you know he would not go into. So are you serious about dealing with crime? Look at the crime numbers. The crime numbers speak for themselves. And the government has seen incapable of dealing with a major issue and the income inequality in our country. I mean, it is a government of the people. You're not there to represent. Yes, we want the business community to do well, because if they do well, the trickle-down theory does not work. The Reaganomics, the Thatcherism, it has been, discredited significantly. But the point is, the opportunity for the micro, not even the small, because the micro entrepreneur to get an opportunity, to get a seat at the table, the opportunity to create other opportunities, foreign exchange reserves, look what you're hearing is a crisis with foreign exchange, and yet you're allowing these franchises into the country, and you have the Minister of Health telling you to eat healthily when these franchises are not healthy eating and they're using up our foreign exchange. So there's so many things I could go on and on about, that when HOPE comes into being and is launched, we stand for honest on government, we stand for integrity, because I think it's missing on both sides. But what people will see is that we're not just talking it talk. We have a proven track record, and people who do have a proven track record that have committed themselves to doing and implementing. That's what people have not seen.
Yeah, and from my limited knowledge of it, and from hearing of some of the persons that are involved, these are people who, by and large, have already played roles one way or the other, and have a track record. Whether you like them, you don't like them personally, that's aside and apart from some of the things you can't take away. But unfortunately, that's all the time that we have. We had the interruption to our interview here this morning, and we just scratched the surface of the things that I wanted to get out of this interview with you. So we're going to have you back, and probably we could probably have some other members of HOPE to come and speak as well with you.
Oh, that would be very good.
Yeah, I would like absolutely that very much, to have some more, so that we can have a well-rounded discussion on what this new entity entails and all of these things, which I think is important moving forward.
Of course, I forgot to mention Steve Alvarez, who's interim chairman, but in terms of probably why I singled out and without anything, it was to show that we are results-oriented. We're not another topic, with all due respect to Mr. Lloyd Best.
Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Teixeira, thank you so much for being with us here this morning. And I'm sure that we'll speak to you again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you once again for being with us this morning.